Ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back. Makes the catch!
What a play! Wade
Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy!
This is the Shoeless Goat Podcast.
Brent Brown drops the ball! He drops the ball! 3 runs will score!
You gotta be peeping me! What in the hell are you doing?
Hello and welcome back to the Shoeless Goat Podcast. We're at Cubs, White Sox, and MLB Podcast. I'm your host, Nick. I'm joined again by the mayor of Section 49, Mr. Intentional Walk himself, Patrick Bovard. Pat, how you doing?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I knew that was going to come up. And, you know, as we led into this, you were telling me you were coming up with a new introduction. So I should have seen something like that coming. But, it's been a weird week, I think is the best way to put it. I guess we'll get to that whole situation. But just remember, if the only reason he walked those guys was because of analytics. That was the only reason. The numbers made him do it. But in any event, yeah, I don't know. I'm starting to get, I'm getting close to panic time here.
Yeah, I would be there if I were you as well. Especially if, I'll say this, right? Even when the Cubs were winning, Meatballs were calling for the firing of Joe Maddon. Shockingly enough, that's something we'll be talking about again later in the episode. So I wouldn't be so worried about the fans calling for Tony's job mid-game, but I also understand where they're coming from.
I think it's totally justified at this point. Like, obviously, like, he's not the one out there, you know, not hitting or, you know, giving up 11 runs in that game. But, like, you're making bad decisions with that intentional walk. The lineups have been really freaking weird, like moving Andrew Vaughn down throughout the year. The bullpen management has just been very bizarre these last few games, which we'll get to. But, like, part of me is, like, I want to be there, you know, chanting fire Tony and all that. But, like, I know it's not going to happen. Like, he's like golf buddies with Jerry Reinsdorf. He's not getting fired just because they're playing bad. If he leaves, it's because he doesn't want to be there anymore.
We need Hawk Harrelson back. Just like that, like those companies that bring in people just to fire people, like that movie Up in the Air was about. Oh, just bring in Hawk Harrelson to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, he did it once before. Maybe he's the hero we need right now. Just get somebody, send a car over to South Bend to bring him back.
Just one last he gone.
Oh my God, that'd be something. But I don't know, you know, that would happen. It last happened in 86. Top Gun came out in 86 and just came out again. Maybe it could happen again.
I love that. I hope you saw that somewhere or just made that up.
No, I just can't. I thought that up right now. I hope I didn't subconsciously see it somewhere, but
hey, you know, credit where credit's due. Any case, I'm going to make you wait to talk about the Sox because it'll be a nice little short recap for the Cubs. They played 4 baseball games and won 0 of them. They didn't play a game on Monday. They were off. They were in Baltimore and Camden Yards. I admittedly didn't have a chance to watch the game, but all these highlights kept coming up on my phone of like monstrous home runs hit by Wilson Contreras and Christopher Morel. And I was like, wow, Cubs must be dominating. And then I checked the score and it was like 6-2 or something like that. And the game ended 9-3. So that was ugly. Redemption though, Wednesday was not to be, as they were rained out. So you got technically swept by the Baltimore Orioles. And it was the first of 2 sweeps on the East Coast as the Cubs went to the Little League Park known as Yankee Stadium, only to allow a number of massive home runs in that park. It started off kind of close though on Friday, which was the first game against the Yankees, when they lost 2-1 in 13 innings. No one can score in that game except for the Yankees found a way in the 13th as the home team. Saturday, the Cubs lost 8-0 while giving up, hear this, 6 home runs. Most of them of the solo variety, as you can imagine, but that'd be a fun little math problem to do, like the number of ways you can get 8 runs while hitting 6 home runs. Anyway, one by Rizzo and one by Gleyber Torres, so former Cubs or former Cub prospects, which I would only argue one of them should have been traded away. So let's just go with that. In any case, you have one last chance to do something on Sunday. You score first in the first inning, only to lose 18-4 against the Yankees to complete the second sweep of the weekend. Or the second sweep of the week, I should say. Matt Carpenter doing what he does against the Cubs, hitting 2 home runs and a double in that game. I feel like, yeah, he has definitely entered the group of Cub killers for sure, if he hadn't been already. I know Nick Surges had tweeted out his list of Cub killers being Albert Pujols, Ryan Braun, and then, of course, Matt Carpenter. I guess Goldschmidt's there. I responded with the lesser known, the Carlos Lees, the Ben Gamels of the world. Anybody making their first career start against, well, first career start in general, dominating the Cubs. But in any case, it was an ass week where they only played four games, lost all four of them. And we will not hear fire Rossi chants when we get back to Wrigley. I know the Cubs are kind of in a delay right now against the Padres, but there's an argument to be made we should. So let's just leave it at that and talk about some Sox baseball, I guess, unless you had some further comments there.
I'm good to move on. I think, yeah, just take away Yankees offense good. And I feel like, you know, the Yankees have some good mojo going when they can pull Matt Carpenter off the scrap heap and he can actually hit. I feel like normally when they try those moves, they don't go well, but this year it is. And that probably means they're going to be really good or lose horrendously in the playoffs and upset their fans, which would be kind of funny, but I'm good to move on if you are.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've done that in the past, though. You're absolutely right. With, I think, Luke Voit. That one actually turned out well.
Yeah.
But he was doing a whole lot of nothing. And then who was the left? Is it Matt Holliday?
Yeah, I think they got Matt Holliday. Like, Carlos Beltran, didn't he go there for, like, a year?
Something like that. They had Ichiro for a year.
Yeah. So, it's just, I feel like it usually doesn't go well. But I guess Matt Carpenter, this is just the year. If he's out there hitting like that, it's the mustache, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not used to seeing him without the caveman beard. They wish that they played the Cubs, you know, another 80 times. I think Carpenter would break Bonds' record.
Oh, God, if only. Was that like a few years ago now, the whole salsa thing where he went off against the Cubs?
Yes.
That was him, right?
That was him. It was Matt Carpenter's salsa, because you know where you go for good Mexican food is St. Louis.
Matt Carpenter's house? Oh, yeah. Hey, yeah. Me Ranchito, shout out.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you go there?
No. I only had a few limited opportunities to go get food, and unfortunately, it didn't make the cut.
I will say, Pat, so Pat was in St. Louis this previous weekend. Is Chris Bryant right? Is it boring?
I have a lot of sentimental memories with that town, so I won't talk too badly of it. But the way I describe it to people, to be as nice as I can, is that it is a great town for a long weekend, and that's about it.
That's what I say about Carbondale, Illinois as well.
I mean, it's not much bigger.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. I think we've talked enough about that little town down there.
Don't let Yachty know. He's going to, you know, come out with some strong words against us.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. Oh, my God. Do not get me started. We'll talk about him at the end of the episode.
We will.
But in any case, let's hear that Sox recap, Pat.
Yeah. I don't know. It's. The good news was for four out of the six games, the offense actually did pretty well. And honestly, it was very, very close to being a good week. But instead, they went 2-4 for, I don't know, like the fifth week in a row that it went 2-4. And it was really disappointing. So I guess going through the week, the first series was against the Dodgers at home. That started off super well. They won 4-0 on Tuesday. Really good pitcher's duel for most of the game until the sixth inning. I believe it was the sixth when they offense finally got going. There were two outs and David Price came in out of the bullpen, which I didn't realize he is now a short stint reliever. But AJ Pollock hit an RBI double off of him. Berger hit an RBI double. Michael Kopech went six with eight strikeouts, giving up one hit to that offense, which is about as good of a start as you can get to that series. Wednesday, they lost 4-1, but like it was a game where Dodgers hit two home runs in the first two innings. Sox really didn't get much offense outside of a Jake Berger solo shot. And then Trey Turner hit a homer in the ninth for good measure. So like you lose 4-1 to the Dodgers with a chance to win the series, you'll take it. But then came the Thursday game. The offense actually came to play and they were leading 4-0 through five innings. And I believe I sent to I know Pete Carey was at that game. And I believe I sent in a text to him that like asking the question, are the White Sox bad for baseball? And then they gave up 10 runs in the next two innings, mainly on the backs of that pretty bad Jake Berger error that led to an extended inning. And then, of course, the intentional walk to Trey Turner. Maybe that home run from the night before scared him. But as we all know, runner on first, Freddie Freeman. Bennett Souza gets ahead of Trey Turner, 0-2, throws a wild pitch. Freddie Freeman goes to second, and La Russa makes the galaxy brain decision to walked Trey Turner to first with the base open with two outs. And then, of course, Max Muncy comes in and hits a home run to left field. The rest is history. The Sox end up losing. They still miraculously got the tying run to the plate in the ninth with another big double from AJ Pollock. But just obviously that was the moment of that game. And I'm sure once we get to the more of the crossfire part, we'll talk about that. But that was just obviously perplexing. There's not really enough words to describe that. But in any event, you know, you probably should have won that series against the Dodgers, which makes it, you know, pretty rough to handle. But you know, we're also at home for the second series of the week against Texas, which should have been another series win. You know, you won Friday 8-3, a pretty comfortable victory. You scored five runs in the eighth to go ahead, and the offense gave you a five-run win. That has not happened for that much and seemed like it was going to be a good thing. But then the weekend was another story. Saturday, they led 5-0. So for the second game of the week, they blew at least a four-run lead. They got it back to a 7-4 lead at that, but ended up losing in the 10th inning. Just not a good game. Grandal left with an injury. So just, you know, not good at all. Sunday was just a weird game. They lost 8-6 where Kopech left the game two batters in with a leg injury when he threw a pitch, came down, planted, and supposedly felt the pop in his knee, left the game. Apparently not going to need an IL stint probably, so it might have just been some sort of weird freak injury. But in any event, in a day the bullpen really needed rest, they had to go to Johnny Cueto, who was not prepared to throw that day and was at the sauna in the morning, you know, getting ready for a start today, Monday when we're recording, and had to pitch five innings out of the bullpen. Just a weird game. Like Dylan Cease was warming up. That Tony claims was just to get his work in. But usually I would imagine if you're getting a starter to get their work in, you don't send them out to the bullpen in uniform in the eighth inning to throw during a jam. But, you know, that's maybe why I'm not in the Hall of Fame. But in any event, you know, probably should have won that game. They held the Rangers to a scoreless 10th inning, didn't score, gave up three in the 11th, came back and scored a three, and then gave up two more in the 12th to lose the game. So all in all, 2-4 week, leaving them four games under 500 and six back of Minnesota with a minus 56 run differential, the much publicized fourth worst one in the American League. So I don't know. We've been talking about the White Sox just being on the cusp for a while, and they just haven't done anything. So I think it's getting close to panic time here.
I think so. So yeah, you mentioned we were going to talk about the intentional walk. First, when I heard it, I thought that there was one out. I'm curious if La Russa also thought there was one out.
I've heard that. I've heard, did he think the count was 2-1 or something? Because it doesn't make sense.
Even at 2-1, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Because okay, you're giving a guy a base and you're starting a fresh count. I think a 2-1 count, I'm calling that an even count. I mean, Greg Maddux calls the 2-1 count the most important pitch of the at-bat. So, because it sets the tone for the entirety of it. It's either 3-1 or it's 2-2. And either, you know what I'm saying? So I think it's the most important pitch. So you wouldn't walk anybody on 2-1. You definitely don't walk anybody 1-2. Well, I don't even think Barry Bonds ever got walked intentionally after a 1-2 count, let alone Trey Turner, future Cub Trey Turner.
I just like, I don't, the thing about it is the whole, well, I see what you snuck in there. In any event, the thing that makes no sense is that, like, if he would have just walked him without throwing him a pitch or done the whole, you know, throw around the zone, see if he chases the pitch, and then at 3-0 you intentionally walk him, it would have been weird, obviously. But Muncy's been struggling, and it would have been more defensible because, obviously, Turner hit a home run the night before. He's been one of the better hitters in baseball, you know, over the last couple of years. But, like, with 1-2, he said, like, the pitch got away, and he's like, after the game, do you know what Turner hits with two strikes? And then he said, do you know what Muncy hits with two strikes off lefties? Which, obviously, you know, maybe he thought something different, but the game doesn't work that way where the count transfers. But, like, and then again, quoting numbers, like, there's not one analytic anywhere that would tell you to intentionally walk somebody 1-2.
No.
It just...
Well, that's the thing. Tony's not working with analytics there. He went with a gut feeling, and he was completely wrong, right? Yeah. And the problem is that at whatever age he is, doesn't matter what your gut feeling is, you know? It's probably wrong. And here's the thing. I've seen managers, like, walk, you know, when the ball gets away, guys gets the second, you set up the double play, that's fine, but not in the 1-2 count. The thing that bothers me the most is not the decision. It's not how it went down. If Max Muncy strikes out, it's still a dumb play. But here's the thing. You don't even look like a genius if you get it right. Let's just put it that way. But it was the when the beat reporters had the guts to actually call him out on it, which nobody really. I mean, Chicago reporters are not do not have the spine of New York reporters to call out the bullshit. I mean, we dealt with Matt Nagy for 4 years. We had Jim Boylan calling timeouts down eight with 11 seconds left, and no one asked a damn question about it. So finally, the reporter said, "This is enough," and asked Tony to explain himself, and he doubled down and basically called everybody idiots without saying words.
Like, that was insane when he was like, "Is there some question of whether or not that was the right move?" Like, it was just, it was insane. Like, I could, if you just own up and say, "I thought it was going to work, it didn't," but like, he was just like, he kept talking about how like, it was like there was no question it was the right decision.
It just reminds me of, this is like a dumb comparison, but it reminds me of like the players that got caught with steroids. And it was like, you know, like the guys who fought it continuously looked guilty, but like Andy Pettit like said, "Yeah, I did it. I'm sorry. It was bad. I was trying to get better from an injury." And Andy Pettit's getting Hall of Fame votes now, like lots and of them.
Everybody forgets about it.
Exactly. So definitely, I know the PR guy was like, you know, running to Tony before the press conference.
Cue the little girl Jesus Christ video.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't get to him in time, or worse, told him not to talk about it and was ignored.
It's just one of those things where like that shouldn't be happening with this team. Like, obviously managers, you know, like the fire Tony things, like when teams are bad or underperforming, managers get the flag, but like you don't bring in a guy that's in the Hall of Fame for that.
Yeah, no, it's bad. And I do think that he's losing the room too, honestly. I mean, the locker room. There's no way you don't lose the room. Like, you act like that and you don't lose the room. And it's starting to permeate. I mean, as we're recording, the Sox are playing a game and Lance Lynn kind of loses his shit against one of the coaches too. So it's
that stuff
doesn't happen on winning teams. It just reminds me of like the Carlos Zambrano, like, and Michael Barrett getting into it in the dugout. Like, that was a bad team, and that's what happens.
I mean, I think that's like part of it is like, you know, part of me wants to get upset and like, "Oh, how is he doing this, this or that?" But like, it's just, it happens so much. And we all know he's not going to get fired. If he leaves, it's because he wants to leave. Like, the White Sox hired him because Jerry Reinsdorf regretted letting Hawk fire him 36 years ago. He's not getting fired again. Like, it's not going to happen.
So that's your vote for the question I was just about to ask, in fact, because I think that Ross is underperforming, even though there's really no standard of how he should be performing. But who lasts longer? I think they started a year apart, right? David Ross's first year was Rick Renteria's last year.
Yep.
But in any case, not by, I guess not by days or anything. Like, who loses their job first? Is it David Ross or is it Tony La Russa? Both have very skewed agendas when it comes to why they pick their manager. I think the Cubs picked their manager to, I guess, draw some of that 2016, put some asses in the seats, and just put a very friendly face on the front of a very bad team. And La Russa gets the job because he's buddies with Reinsdorf. So neither of them got the job on their merit, if you ask me. So who leaves first while proving a lack of merit, if you will?
I honestly can't see Tony La Russa staying another year after this one. I don't think he gets fired, but I just like, I can't see him wanting to come back to this again. I mean, I always thought if they won last year or this year, if they won or got to the World Series, then that would be it. But if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think there's any chance he comes back. Like,
he retires then.
Yeah, exactly. The case, he says, right? He's done. He steps down. Like, I think that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think will ever get fired by the White Sox, but I genuinely cannot see him coming back after this year. I don't know if it's just like, I don't want to play the age card, but like, he just seems like when he's yelling at reporters about this, he just doesn't want to deal with it anymore. But I don't think a guy with that ego is leaving before the end of the season. So I'm going to go with, I guess, David Ross, because I think he gets at least one more year. Or so David Ross wins the longevity contest.
Yeah, no, that's, I'm going to tend to agree with you, because I just don't think the Cubs care enough. No.
They don't want to buy out a manager and have to pay him.
Exactly. So that's a problem in itself. But speaking of managers, 2 weeks in a row, we have predicted the demise of a manager. First it was Joe Girardi. And then we kind of jokingly said, Joe Maddon's probably next, but also he'll probably just retire because Joe Maddon doesn't get fired. And Joe Maddon got fired the next day. I'm on my run the next day listening to like some news, and it just happened. So,
well, then what we get 2 days later, we get the story how he shaved a mohawk into his head to try to fire up the team. And then he got the news that same day that he was getting fired.
Yeah, I just imagine getting called into the office and he doesn't have his hat on. And it's the guy you're about to fire shows up in a mohawk.
You've got to be bleeping me.
It just reaffirms the decision entirely.
Yeah, just he walks in like to Perry Manassian's office. That's their GM, right? And he's just like, Joe, what's with the hair? He's like, you know, I'm just trying to fire the guys up. I think this is really going to work. And it's like, oh boy, do I have bad. Do you want me to start with the good news or the bad news?
It's like, well, speaking of firing, you know. No, I did make some comparisons in my notes of what it was like if Joe Madden showing up in a mohawk. It's like having the best Halloween costume but being sick the day of the party.
Yeah.
But also another Halloween comparison, having the best Halloween costume, but it's too cold to not wear a jacket while trick-or-treating.
That's always brutal.
Yeah. So
it's just showing up at a party and you have the wrong day for it or something.
Yeah. Something like that. It's just, there's being told there's a theme to a party, but there is no theme.
Yeah.
I think that's the winner. When in college we had parties where we said it was a jersey party, so everybody wore like hockey jerseys and baseball jerseys, and then everyone who lived in the house dressed up like the Jersey Shore. That was awesome. But anyway, yeah. So maybe you want to do a service to the White Sox, Pat. Can you just predict? Are you willing to predict that the White Sox fire Tony La Russa just to make it so, or would that be more detrimental to the team?
I don't know, because also it's like if you fire him, who's taking over? Like I see people saying Ozzy, which if you want to fire a manager who was out of baseball for 10 years to hire another manager who literally quit on the team his last in here and has also not managed in 10 years, I don't know. But like I don't know who they would get like from that coaching staff. Like I don't know if it would help, but I want to predict it because I think it would be the right decision. I don't think Rick Hahn is the authority to do that. And I think that's why it's not going to happen. But I guess who knows? Maybe they're going to fire La Russa. He's going to leave after the season, and we're going to get another White Sox guy to be the manager, like AJ or Ozzy comes back, which I don't know. One of the few, I feel like, organizations in professional sports that just cannot stop hiring their own people for jobs, which is probably why they've had such little success over the course of time.
Yeah, I think here's my theory, right, is that AJ, again, I think it was last week, was planting the seed while he was doing like a radio or a TV broadcast that he wants to manage. And he also, on live TV, predicted that they were going to win the division by 20 games. So maybe he thinks he's the one to do it.
If he can get them to win by 20 games with whatever voodoo magic it is, then by all means, bring him in.
I mean, look, I don't think that the jump from broadcaster to manager works. David Ross being a perfect example of it. Steve Kerr is like the only one that actually works, but
but like he also has like a ridiculous offense right now that like you're slotting Aaron Judge into the leadoff spot.
Yeah. He's a leader of savages apparently. but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess, yeah, I'll predict it. Tony La Russa is getting fired and then it happens and we're 3-for-3. And if not, we're 2-for-3, and that's still Hall of Fame numbers.
That's really good. If anybody hits 2-for-3, yeah, I don't think you'd forget about them.
No, absolutely not. I think we've talked about that enough, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, there's so much to say, but like, I'm just so like, I don't know. Part of me wants to go on, you know, release a rant of like this or that with the whole fire Tony thing, like write a blog about it. But like, it's just, I just know it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, none of the good news ever happens in the beginning of the week. We record weekly. I mean, at the end of the week, I should say. It always happens Monday or Tuesday, and then we have to wait, and then like the news cycle is kind of recycled itself. So anything we say is just kind of a reiteration of, you know, I mean, what others have said.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I don't know. It's like it's just Teflon. Like he could literally bat himself lead off for a week and he wouldn't get fired.
If Tony La Russa bats himself leadoff for a week and doesn't swing the bat, who gets more walks, him or Yasmani Grandal?
Oof. That's a tough one.
He probably leans into him, you know?
Yeah. that would be a bad news if he took one off the elbow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But in any case, I think it's time to move on. Obviously, both teams are terrible. I'm done talking about the Cubs entirely, but I will say this is a good segue, I guess, because player of the week, I'll just say it. Nobody from the Cubs is the player of the week when you don't win a baseball game, especially against the Baltimore Orioles, or when you have leads at a tiny ballpark like Yankee Stadium. I know the Yankees are good. Win a game. That's it. That's all I've got. Who's your player of the week, Pat?
I guess maybe this week for the player of the week graphic, we have to put up those like silhouette pictures they had during the lockout for the Cubs to win. But in any event, I'm going with AJ Pollock. I really wanted to give it to Jake Berger again. I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, but in any event, you know, he hit 400 with a couple of homers, but just those defensive errors were pretty costly. So between that voter fatigue, we're going with AJ Pollock, who had 7 RBIs on the week. So obviously a very good offensive week, 3 doubles, 10 hits, and really had a couple big RBIs over the course of the week. Obviously against the Dodgers, David Price, when it was a 0-0 game, he broke it open with a 2 RBI double. And then against the Rangers, you know, they didn't end up winning. But he did have that, or was that Thursday? I don't even know. Thursday against the Dodgers, everything's bleeding together, man. He did have a double to bring the tying run on base in the 9th inning there. So again, it's kind of like, I feel like I've said this every week with somebody, that whoever the player of the week is that, oh, if we can get this guy hitting, we're going to be golden. And then someone else does that, but whoever did start hitting then drops out of it. So I don't know, but if AJ Pollock can just hit to the back of his baseball card to take a Tonyism, we'll be in better shape. Not going to say good shape, because there's a lot going wrong right now, but better shape.
It might even be AJ Pollock's best week of his career when you think about 7 RBIs in a week from a guy who, I guess when he was in Arizona, was playing full-time. Dodgers, he wasn't. That's got to be up there for him.
Yeah, it was solid. He's finally like looking comfortable at the plate and hitting the ball, so really, that's what you got him for. Got him to be your 7 hitter.
Yeah. Well, I've waited this long for the most exciting news probably of the year, quite frankly. I think you know what's coming here, Pat. There's nothing to do with the Cubs or the Sox, but in fact, there was a Cubs charity auction that I decided to drop probably about a fourth of my bank account on, if not more. But in any case, a game to be decided, yours truly will be announcing a half inning on Marquee Sportsnet. And all I'm asking you, Pat, is what would you like to happen in that inning? I was thinking to myself, I want a home run, obviously, so I can make a home run call. But more so, I want a triple play.
How about a 1-2 intentional walk?
That would be great. Or you know what would be the all-time best? A brawl.
Oh, God, that would be so. Could you imagine them letting some random person on the broadcast and there's a brawl going on that they have to let them call?
Yeah, like, honestly, or, you know, I've been practicing in the car and like I've been practicing my guy gets beaten in the head like, oh, not good.
Yeah, oh, no.
You hate to see that in this sport, you know, something like that. But anyway,
get up already.
Honestly, like I know for a fact that they will have a guy with his finger hovering over the button just waiting for me to swear. Or say something so stupid. But in any case, yeah, that's happening, by the way. I have not heard from the Cubs yet after winning this auction, so maybe it's not happening. I just got scammed out of a lot of money. But, yeah, so that should be happening. They said sometime in this season or sometime next season. So the window is wide open for that.
I should sit in the bleachers during that game, and then you say you're calling into the field reporter.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not going out of the field for a live game break.
And then just be like, well, the Cub Snake is about 6 rows deep now, and I'm just holding my phone up to the microphone.
Oh, God.
We're going to be talking about this a lot till it happens, but let's just keep thinking of ideas of what to say. I'm definitely going to try to plug the show, but in a sly way, because we need a new intro, obviously, because all of the players in the intro no longer play for the teams. Not that they did for the Sox anyway, but it's still a great intro, so I'm going to keep it until we have something better to replace it with. But I'm excited for it. I'm excited to call someone getting, you know, absolutely decked, like something crazy. I want something nuts. I know it's going to be just like a 1-2-3 inning.
With like 5 pitch inning.
Yeah, just pop flies to center field. But honestly, if it's that short, I'm going to say it on the air. I'm going to say, mind if I stick around for the bottom half, boys? And what are they going to say? No on live TV?
Oh God. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I didn't spend this kind of money for 3 minutes. I spent it for at least six.
pull like those what those people are doing in the NBA playoffs and just glue yourself to the broadcast chair.
Oh, there you go. In protest.
Yeah, just I'm gonna break this out for a second.
Or there was that old SNL bit where they brought Andy Samberg on, and he was kind of like pretending to be a Make-A-Wish kid, and he kept saying that'll move the chains when there was no chains to be moved. So like there's a single up the middle, like, oh, that'll move the chains. There's the possibilities are endless. The demons in my, you know, the devil that sits on the shoulder has so many better ideas than the angel. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
But in any case, I think that's a good place to stop on a kind of a laughing note on a pretty down week in Chicago baseball. But in any case, of course, episode would not be complete without a question Pat has not heard yet. We've asked Pat a lot of questions and a lot of good ones, actually. This one, not so good, but just kind of a gauge where he's at. Basically put, Pat, are you convinced that the Sox will make the playoffs? And how concerned are you? 10 being most concerned, 1 being not concerned at all, as we've got it in the bag.
Okay, so how did you phrase the first part of the question? Am I convinced that they're going to make the playoffs?
I actually just misread my own handwriting. Concerned is the word I was looking for, so I pivoted back to concerned.
So I still think they make the playoffs as of right now, and that's not just like blind optimism. I don't think they're going to suddenly flip a switch and win the division by 10 games. But I do think the schedule is easy enough, and like law of averages, some of these people have to turn it around to an extent, especially with, you know, Tim Anderson coming back soon, Aloy coming back. I mean, they had to pause his rehab stint, but hopefully coming back. Lance Lynn finally back. Grandal, before he got hurt, was starting to heat up. I just think there's two, like, I don't think they're going to win the division by 10 games. I obviously don't think they're going to go on a tear and win 95 games, but I honestly think like 86, 87 wins the Central. And I just think there's too much talent on the roster for them to not get to that. I don't think it's an 100% chance they do that, but if I had to put a percentage on it right now, I would say 55%. So enough where I'm willing to say I think they're still going to do it, but it would not surprise me at this point if they don't, I guess is the best way I could put it. Like, I still, like, I don't know. Like, am I just crazy for thinking that? Like, there's just too much talent for them to not start trending in that direction, because they've been this bad. And they're still only 4 games under 500.
Yeah. So I think so that puts you at a 4.5 out of 10 concern by that 55% margin.
Yes. Yeah.
If my math is right. But yeah, no, I don't think you're crazy for thinking that only because the division's bad.
Yep.
That's my main factor there. I don't think they get a wild card either, so you got to win the division.
I guess that's the other thing. Like, the wild
card
right now.
There's an extra wild card actually now, too.
Any team that's over 500, I think, right now pretty much is in a wild card spot, except for maybe Cleveland. And, like, even if they don't win, they get to 87 wins. If they don't win the division, like, that probably is enough for a wild card spot. And I think, like, even if they don't win the Central, there are enough games against the Tigers, the Royals, and I don't know how Cleveland's hanging around, but they always do it. But I think there's enough games against bad teams. Plus, they have the like easiest strength of schedule of any team in baseball the rest of the way. I just think there's enough room to get into a playoff position. Do I think they can win a playoff series right now? No. But that's the beauty of it. You get into the playoffs and see what happens. Yeah, I'm not like going the full Steve Stone, like, you know, anybody that thinks they're not going to do good is crazy. But I don't know. Maybe I've bought into the Kool-Aid of the rebuild too much.
I think anybody rightfully would have, but they haven't added like a power bat in like 2 years. So
to quote like the what Chris Evans from Endgame, like, I don't know what I'm gonna do if they don't make it.
Oh, okay. That's fair. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, so yeah, okay, yeah. It's like what if it's been out for 3 years, so I'm not gonna spoiler alert it, but like, you know, it's like they're trying to bring everybody back from the Thanos snap, and it's like they're like, how do you know this is going to work? It's like, I don't know what I'm going to do if it doesn't. That's kind of how I feel about the White Sox making the playoffs right now. If I waited all those years of losing for the high watermark to be Leury Garcia hitting a 3-run homer to put him up 6-5 against the Astros in a series they would lose in 4 games, I my brain wouldn't function.
Thank you for that explanation, Pat. The infinite universe theory is lazy writing, and I'll leave it at that. Okay. That concludes our episode. You can listen to us. It's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, SoundChicago.com. Also, go to the Twitter of Sound Chicago. I put out a poll as of recording. By the time you hear this, it'll probably be about 12 to 4 hours left, depending on when you listen. I don't know when people listen to our podcast, if at all. But I have a poll out there. Who do you think will get fired first, Ross or La Russa? So check that out, maybe, and comment your rationale too. We want to see what everyone's thinking there. But in any case, as I mentioned before, Yadi Molina is not a Hall of Famer. All I could say is go Cubs, go White Sox, go MLB. Have a great week.